Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. John Freiberger is back with us. He's a registered home inspector. His business is Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. He focuses on sustainable renovation and restoration. He's with us every couple of months to talk about home improvement projects and repairs. So we'll talk a bit about rain screen systems and, of course, take your home improvement questions as well, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Great to be back with you, Larry.
Well, let's start with rain screens. And for those who aren't familiar with them, what's a rain screen system?
Well, a rain screen system is something that is fairly new. We now have this field of work or endeavor or education called building science. That didn't exist when you and I were kids. Back when we were kids, people built houses the way they always built houses. It was sort of, they handed down how to frame a wall, how to put on the siding, how to put in the windows from, father to son to apprentice or whatever. And then in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, we started getting different materials. And a lot of those materials we call was wood. It used to be wood, but it isn't anymore. So things like oriented strand board, sheathing, plywood even from the 1940s, composite sidings that are made out of chips of wood or maybe bits of Portland cement glued together. So we get all these new things. And like a lot of new things, a lot of them didn't work. And their big enemy turned out to be water. So we ended up with lots and lots of disasters around the United States with newer houses. And building science was sort of the response of the industry. We needed to actually study in laboratories, set up test houses, do long-term tests, the sort of thing that Forest Products Lab here in Wisconsin does. And that building science started coming up with new ways of managing water. And the rain screen is a water management system.
Okay, and do most new homes now have those systems when they're put in?
Some do. The most common rain screen system, if it's done right, Larry, and getting it done right, of course, is always the big thing in the construction industry, is plain old vinyl siding. So if we've got a rain screen system, we basically have five parts to the system. First, we got the structure of the house, or the frame walls. Well, every house has got that, whether it's a rain screen or not. Then we've got sheathing on the house, which could be oriented strand board, or on your old house, it could be that black, that black composite board, or it could be blue foam. And all houses have that. And then on the outside, we have what's called cladding. Now, the cladding is the siding, could be the brick, it could be stucco, it could be insulation finish system, or it could be a combination like half timbering on, Tudor Revival houses. And all of them have that. What vinyl siding has, if you look at it, is little holes on the bottom. And those holes are there to let water out because vinyl siding is a rain screen. It's like a screen on your door. It stops a lot of water, but it doesn't stop it all. So some of it goes through. So we are not relying upon our vinyl siding to keep our house dry. What we are relying upon is what's in back of the vinyl siding and over the sheathing, which is what's called a weather-resistant barrier. Now, many times it's house wrap. So Tyvek is one of the most common ones, but Kimberly-Clark makes them. Lots of companies make them. So your house is wrapped with this material that is not supposed to leak. And then the vinyl siding is not nailed dead tight. So if water gets behind the vinyl siding, it actually can drain down to the bottom of the wall or to a flashing above a window. And that is called a drainage plane. So having the weather-resistant barrier and the drainage plane to actually catch and channel the water is what makes a rain screen system work.
If we don't have one, how do we add them to, say, a masonry or other types of exteriors, homes that don't have them?
Yeah. With masonry, it's really difficult. Now, modern masonry, and in Wisconsin by code since 1980, we are supposed to have, all brick is supposed to be a rain screen. And the Uniform Dwelling Code in Wisconsin required that there be an air gap in back of brick and that there be weeps and that things like the window sills actually have flashing. Because we know that all brick veneer leaks. I mean, this is, you can usually make it leak in something like 30 seconds if you run a hose against it. So masonry is supposed to have a rain screen. Often it doesn't. And for people who are doing remodeling on their houses or are building a new house, you really want to watch what the mason is doing because there are a whole number of common mistakes that we are seeing in masonry so that the rain screen really doesn't work. One of the big ones is that the air gap in back of the brick is filled up with mortar so nothing can go through it or the flashings are missing. Now, for other types of siding, Larry, you've seen the news. Prices on a lot of building materials are up 300 to 400%. And what we are seeing is a lot of deterioration of the composite materials. So there are things like the fibrous cement. There are the wood fibers. There have literally been billions of dollars of class action lawsuits for this stuff failing. So we are, if we're re-siding our house, going to be putting a whole lot of money into the siding. Now, vinyl siding, of course, is the least expensive by far. But some people live in areas where vinyl siding isn't allowed by the neighborhood association, so they've got to use something that looks like wood or wood itself. And what we have found in our inspection of new homes and re-sided homes with problems is that without a rain screen, we are finding that vinyl siding is decomposing much more rapidly than the installers or the manufacturers ever thought. So if we're going to re-side our house, we want to make sure we understand how the material is to be applied. And at this point, most manufacturers of siding have an option for rain screen. And we want to download those instructions for the option for the rain screen because our siding is going to last much longer if we are controlling and draining the moisture rather than letting it simply pond in back of the siding and soak it.
makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, otherwise there could be a lot of problems. And I guess I've heard you say in the past, John, make a copy of those, whatever directions they are, and keep one for yourself and give one to the person who's doing the work.
That is the best advice I think we can give anybody who's building a new home or doing remodeling is you're not going to know as much as the contractor. I mean, they've got skills with, you know, pneumatic nailers and things that you're never going to have. But it is just amazing, Larry, if you go online and look at some of the installation instructions, 40, 50, 60 pages of detailed drawings that anyone can understand, including a homeowner who doesn't know which end of the hammer to hold. And the other thing is simply to tell the installer, you are going to do it this way. You know, you bought GAF shingles, or you bought LP siding, or you bought Hardy Plank siding. Here's what Hardy Plank says, and I'm so surprised at how frequently we find that the installers have never seen those instructions, because we are seeing probably the majority of non-vinyl siding put on wrong. And, Larry, there are new houses that are costing people over $1 million that are leaking the day that they're finished, because the people building these very expensive houses have not read the instructions.
Man. So a word of warning, and we can talk some more about, certainly about rain screen systems as we move along today. A lot of callers online with questions. Okay. John's, in fact, all our lines are filled. Let's go to Barb in Wausau to start things out here. Barb, hi.
Hi, and thanks, guys, for taking my call. I got what sounds like a dumb question, but I just moved into a house that we now have central air. Do I still need to have a dehumidifier?
Maybe. It depends upon the moisture loads that you have in your house. If you have three goldfish tanks, four teenagers who take long showers, a cat, three dogs, and a hamster, you may be putting a lot of pints of moisture into your house that another person isn't. So very inexpensively, usually for under $20, you can go online or go to your local hardware store and get a nice little humidistat, one that will record the indoor relative humidity right now when you look at it, but also one we can read out for the last day or the last week. And in the winter, we know it's very important to stay under 40%. In the summer, really under 50% is good. So if you're not sure what your humidity is, go ahead and get that. It's possible that you might need a dehumidifier in the basement because the relative humidity down there may be much higher. If you have a dirt crawl space, a concrete block or concrete CMU, concrete masonry unit wall, you may have more humidity in the basement. So you may need a dehumidifier in the basement, but not a whole house dehumidifier. So maybe even buy two of those little things, you know, spend $40, put one in the basement, one upstairs, and actually have some measurements so that you can make an informed decision by knowing how much relative humidity you have in parts of your house.
Yeah, good advice. Barb, good luck. Thank you for calling. Annalisa in Green Bay, your turn now. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. My question is about a leak I have in my basement. My house is 70 years old, and this leak has been going on for some time, and I think I really need to do something about it. It's in one corner. One corner only where it comes in, and a friend looked at it recently and told me that he thought that the house had settled, which really makes a lot of sense. And it's the exterior is stucco, the basement is cement block, and I'm wondering a couple of things: what you think I should do about this leak, how I can repair it, and how do I know if somebody is reputable in this area? I mean, you see a lot of ads on television, but I have no idea if these people are reputable.
Yeah, that's very difficult. Well, let's talk about your foundation first. So a concrete block or CMU, concrete masonry unit, is a very heavy form of sponge. And if there's water outside the wall, and a 1950s house that might have had asphalt applied to the outside as a waterproofing, but that's long gone. So it leaks really easily. Now, Lisa, often when I find a leak at a corner of a house, I'll walk outside and there's a downspout. And the downspout is not extended 8 feet away from the house. The other thing I'll find is what we call ponding area. So we've had some settlement, you mentioned settlement, where water has come off the roof out of the downspout and the soil has simply settled due to the weight of the water. And so now we've got a spot where water sits, goes into the soil and then into your basement. So the first thing we always do before we spend any real money is we go out and look at our gutters and our downspouts and our grading, because those are cheap things to fix. You know, you buy a downspout extension for $10, and that's a lot cheaper than $5,000 for a water collection system in your basement. So take a look at those things first. You said your friend thinks things have settled. Now, if a concrete masonry unit wall settles, you see what are called step cracks. And they are usually pretty pronounced. You walk in the basement, you see them. So if you don't see that, you just see the normal little cracks we always get in block foundations, then most likely we've got a soil issue outside. So I would look at the soil first. Remember that you do not want this soil. You want about 8 inches of foundation showing outside your house, or at least six. We don't want to put soil up against the siding or up against the stucco. So check that first. If you need a water collection system, it is really difficult. There are good people and there are bad people in all areas. It's interesting that Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection has a whole section in the Wisconsin statutes on basement waterproofers, because ATCP has found, as Larry's probably found out talking to the women who come in on this program, that basement waterproofing is an area rife with fraud. So let's look at the simple stuff first and hope we don't need a basement waterproofer. If we need one,
You can check with the Better Business Bureau, see who has complaints against them. You can actually check with the court system to see who has been sued. And talk to people in your neighborhood who have used a contractor and can really recommend them. And then read the warranty really, really carefully. Does that help, Lisa?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much.
And I will tell you that I had the same issue when I moved into the home I'm currently in. And there was a little water leak on one corner, and I went out and extended the downspout about 3 more feet or 4 more feet, and the problem went away for about $10.
That's right. That's the way to do it. What the general rule that we have, Larry, is we sort of figure that water soaks in it and runs into earth about a 45-degree angle. So if you're basement 6 feet above grade, below grade, you want at least a 6-foot extension. If you got a big, deep basement, it's down 10 feet, you need a 10-foot extension. That's a pain because you got to mow around it and everything else, but still, it really helps to keep the basement dry at very low expense.
Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it very much. John Freiberger, our guest today, registered home inspector. His business is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today. Problems with your home? Maybe give us a call. John Freiberger, our guest today, Wisconsin registered home inspector. Great to have him back. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Barb in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, and I'm sure that the men and women are interested in what I have to ask on this one because it's such a common problem. My question is, I've got a bathroom sink. We put it in last year. It's a pedestal sink, and it's leaking. Is this something that we can fix, or do we have to call a plumber?
It's only a year old.
Yeah.
Okay. I called the plumber who installed it. My guess is that they are simply going to come over and fix it for you under warranty.
You're talking to the woman that installed it.
Oh, dear. You'll have to talk to yourself then. Well...
Home Depot RS.
Yeah, plumbing is really difficult, which is why I avoid it. I mean, I'll build an entire fireplace and a 40-foot chimney, but I won't put a sink in. You're a brave person. I think we need to probably call a plumber and see what we have. Sometimes we get defective parts. So we'll have, like, friction-fit gaskets on the drains, or we will have not the world's best quality shutoff valves. And we'll find little nicks in the brass. And it's not the sort of thing that I think a homeowner can really find. So call your local plumber, have that man or woman come over, take a look at it. And that's probably the path of least resistance, even though it is going to cost a little bit.
Yep. Probably worth it, Barb. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Steve in McFarland, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. And apologies for me being out of breath. I just walked up 5 flights of steps. So here's my question. Since the pandemic, I've been working from home, and I'm relegated to a space in the basement. We have a pretty basic ranch house with a full basement, and I'm down there wearing a sweatshirt all day. And then I walk upstairs and it's, you know, it's steaming. And I'm wondering if there is any type of relatively simple, low cost way of mixing the air better so it's not so stratified.
Probably not low cost, Steve, but it sounds like you've got a comfort problem with your house. And generally what we often find in basements is there's really a lack of return air, or the return air is in the wrong place, like it's on the ceiling. And what we want on the basement is we want the return air down at the floor level, so it's going to pull back into the furnace or the air conditioner. Well, it's the same thing. The coldest, dampest air. And then on the second floor, we want to make sure we have high returns so that in the summer, if our basement is cold and upstairs is nice and warm, all we have to do is put the fan on the furnace. We don't have to run the air conditioner or the heat, and we can balance that out in the house. But unfortunately, that is not something a homeowner can do. Steve, how old is your house in McFarland?
From the mid-70s.
Mid-70s, okay. And see, it probably has a duct system that didn't contemplate finished space in the basement. So I think you really need to talk to a local HVAC person who can come in, analyze your duct system. And we have these neat little tools that it looks like a mini fan, and you hold it up to the register, the return register, or the supply register, and it tells you how many cubic feet per minute are coming through it. And you can do what's called test and balance. And sometimes just by doing some balancing, and most houses, probably yours from the 70, actually has control dampers on the supplies. So you may be able to dial some of those down a little bit for the upstairs and open up a little bit for the basement. But generally, when we look at houses, we find that what was put in for basement ductwork was pretty rudimentary and really doesn't provide comfort. The other reason that I want you to consider beyond just comfort is things like radon. Because if you don't have many air changes in that basement, you're working down there 8 hours a day and you've got high radon, well, we've got possible health issue there. Radon is the second largest cause of lung cancer in the United States behind cigarettes. So having adequate air changes in that basement may be important for your health as well as for your comfort. So talk to a local HVAC contractor, and there's a bunch of good ones around McFarland who can come down and help you modernize that system.
Good points. Okay. Good luck, Steve. Thank you
yeah,
so much for
much.
Call. Yeah, appreciate the call. Well, let's see. Chris in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
The reason I was calling is I was listening to the show, and I'm actually on the board for a Foundation Repair Association of Wisconsin. And I know the caller had called in about being concerned about, you know, getting a qualified contractor. And we have, that's one of the things that we're trying to weed out is people getting taken advantage of, code of ethics. And the association is called WAFRP, and it's Wisconsin Association of Foundation Repair Professionals. It's a growing organization. We've actually had a lot of our standards adapted into the Uniform Building Code. In a couple of things that I know she was saying about the water in the corner, and there's a lot of things that I always go out and look at and kind of what the inspector said is one thing I always look for is downspouts, that the backside of them are always blown apart and water is just leaking right down to the corner and can saturate that corner. A lot of times it's a maintenance issue of just having gutters being replaced, and it takes care of the issue. I've saved hundreds of homeowners just things that, you know, other contractors are trying to get them to spend their money on, and really it's a maintenance issue on the outside, and as soon as they take care of it, they have no issue. The other thing that I was going to suggest is, depending on if she has a sub-pump crock, sometimes those can be set incorrectly, and they're set too high. So when the water starts coming into the sub-pump crock, that water starts to back up, and the first place it's going to come in is the farthest away from the sub-pump. And that can be a corner that's, you know, kitty corner. So those are just little things that I've always had people look at and start with first before they start spending thousands of dollars.
Chris, thank you so much. Comment, John?
I'm very glad to hear that we are getting a professional association. Generally, what I find, Larry, is people that belong to professional associations have a little bit more investment in their field of work than those that that don't. I always tell people looking for a home inspector is make sure that they're a member of the Wisconsin Association or the American Society, and make sure that they've actually care enough to pay annual dues and to keep up with things with their association. So I'm very glad, Chris, to hear that Wisconsin Association of Foundation Repair has been started. And I look forward to seeing when you have a good online list and things so that it'll make referrals easier.
Yeah. Chris, you don't have that yet, do you? Or do you?
We do. It's WAFRP, I believe, .com. And it's we have about, I'd say about 20 members. We've actually had to let a couple of them go. And they were, one of them was a larger contractor because they had so many issues and they weren't taking care of them and they weren't abiding by standards that are in the Uniform Building Code. And we've actually worked with a lot of the state building inspectors throughout the, especially Milwaukee County and surrounding, and we're trying to get more on board as well. And they put a lot of their thoughts and efforts into it to make sure that things are being done correctly.
Well, Chris, that's good news. Thank you so much for calling WAFRP.com, a place to go to find some people who are part of that organization. Thank you, Chris. Sue in Waukesha will give you a chance. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question's regarding granules on shingles. And our roof is 18 years old with a 30-year warranty shingle. But most of the granules are gone. And we need a new roof. The roof has failed. I want to know, is that common in Wisconsin?
18 years on a 30-year shingle sounds as if we have a manufacturing problem. Now, we had mentioned earlier in the program the large class action lawsuits on siding. There are a lot of class action lawsuits on failed shingles, and there are a couple of companies out there that have a really bad reputation, and there's one that simply filed for bankruptcy because of all the claims. So if you can find your paperwork from 18 years ago and see what brand these are, and then you should be able to go online and make a search. And the other thing you can do is talk to a well-qualified, certified Waukesha roofer and have them take a look at it. Now, you also have a very good company in Waukesha that specializes in looking at roofs. And their company name is Roofing Consultants Limited, and all they do is look at roofs. So you may want to give a call to their Waukesha office since you are so close to Roofing Consultants Limited and have them come over and take a look at it. It's now, the warranty that you're going to have at this point is only on the materials, not the labor, and of course the labor is a big part of it, but they should be able to help you. They have an 800 number, which is 549-0802. And I've worked with that firm on many roofs, and when we get to really, really large roofs, large commercial roofs, I simply tell people to call them because they, as I said, they are specialists, and they should be able to help you.
All right. There you go, Sue, 800-549-0802. There's the number. Thank you. Susan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Question is related to a large crack in my basement foundation. I bought the home about 6 years ago. I have, it's about 40 years old. I have had two people come out because I'm concerned about the size of the crack. And they both have assured me that because the sump pump was already installed and there's been something put into the cracks, into the large crack that's supposed to stop water intrusion, and I have no water intrusion. I'm very grateful. But the question is, what about this crack? Do I need to do something? Do I need to fill it? Is that compromising the integrity of the structure?
Mm-hmm. Tough question to answer, Susan, unless one actually sees it. Now, is this a poured concrete wall, as is typical in Madison?
Correct. It was in early 80s.
Early 80s, okay. And if the crack is basically straight up and down, or not absolutely straight up and down, but more or less vertical, you know, within 10 degrees of vertical, it is probably a shrinkage crack. And is not, if it has not moved, if there's no offsets. In other words, if you run your hand back and forth over the crack and you don't feel one side is taller than the other, there's no sign of movement, then you probably do not have a serious issue. Now, if you're planning to sell the house at some point, you know, the home inspector is going to come in and go, oh, I'll get it assessed by a professional. I see a big crack here. Or if you just want for your peace of mind, what we do with cracks like that is we do a pressure-injected epoxy that actually mends the wall back together, and it is not terribly expensive. And so you may want to consider that.
There you go.
I do think the epoxy has been put in. The crack, however, is about half an inch to 3/4 of an inch. It's pretty large.
But it has been epoxied.
Well, the guy that came out said there was something that was shot in throughout the entire vertical crack. But there's still an opening.
It was put in under pressure. You may see every 3 or 4 feet a little tube, or where a little tube has been cut off. And so if you see that and it's been repaired with epoxy and you are not seeing cracks where the epoxy meets the concrete on either side, then I suspect that your crack is in very good shape. Most people who do those repairs, which evidently was done before you purchased the house, will give a 10, 15, or even a 20-year warranty on it. And Madison has, if it was done some years ago, really only had one firm. They're still in existence, and they did very good work. So it's entirely possible that you don't have any problem there at all.
Yeah, let's hope. Thank you, Susan, for calling. Appreciate it. Jill emailed that 3 weeks ago her do-it-yourself neighbor was treating his new wood fence, and he oversprayed all over her garage, vinyl siding, but never told her. When she asked him what he sprayed, he only shared it was Sherwin-Williams water-based and didn't have a label or anything more. Now it's cured, so any miracle product to try and... Is there any miracle product to clean it that won't damage the vinyl?
Well, Sherwin-Williams is a good company. And they have a couple of good distributors here in Madison, and we don't know what it is, but there aren't a lot of materials that are specially formulated for decks. So I think Jill should probably call Sherwin-Williams and say that some sort of latex deck product was oversprayed on her house, and what is their advice? They're going to be the experts. They're going to know the formulation, and if there is a way of taking it off, yeah, it's possible. If it didn't bond real tight, that just pressure washing, it will pop it off. But I really don't know. So let's go to the experts and talk to Sherwin-Williams.
There you go. Thank you, Jill. Jennifer emailed, they have a one-story section on the west side of their home. The roof's very slightly pitched and covered in a black rubber membrane. There are two windows on the two-story section of the house, just over the single-story section. The rubber gets so hot and it radiates into the upstairs through the windows. If she installs a living room or a living roof over the existing membrane, would she need to hire an engineer to be certain there's enough structural integrity on that section? And if she doesn't install a living roof, is there a slightly colored product that she could put over the rubber so that it doesn't absorb the heat from the sun, like some sort of white coating or covering?
Mm-hmm. There are white coatings and coverings, and they're guaranteed to fail, so don't use them. If the roof is older, EPDM roofs or rubber roofs last about 20 years. And if they're getting a lot of sun on the south side, it may be getting older. So when replacing the roof, think of going either to TPO, which is a thermoplastic, which has a longer warranty and is available in white, or in various vinyl roofs that are available in light colors. If you do want to put a living roof on it, you really need to figure out what you're doing. What's the thickness of your soil, the weight of your soil, using a lightweight soil, using standard soil. And it is a good idea to have a structural engineer take a look at it. They're going to have to figure out what the roof rafters are. If it's an older house, It's probably much more lightly framed than a house that was built after 1980. So it is a good idea to get some advice from a structural engineer or at least a builder who can look at the span tables and maybe instead of using the roof rafter span tables, use the floor joist span tables so that they are assuming 55 pounds per square foot instead of 35 pounds per square foot. So a couple different alternatives there, but get a little bit of professional advice. Consider how old the roof is. If it's 15 years old, we don't really want to put plants and dirt on top of a 15-year-old EPDM roof. So in that case, replace the roof with a light product. If it's only a couple years old and the structure's okay, then a green roof is a lovely thing.
Yeah. Soils scientist friend of mine told me once that if you filled a bathtub up with dirt, it's probably a weigh about a ton, a bathtub full. And you'd probably have many bathtubs full of dirt on top of here.
Yeah. But they make lightweight soils also, and there's a lot of engineered soils now for living roofs. And part of it is you do not want to get up, climb up a ladder and try to put a sprinkler on your roof, do you? So they have engineered soils that are better than holding moisture, because you're only going to have 3-4 inches of soil. So you're going to really have to do some research before you put a green roof on the lowest pitch on your house.
Nice idea, though, if you can do it, that's for sure. Charles in Madison. Yeah, Charles in Madison, your turn. Hi, Charles.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I have two things, a related question. One has to do with an ice dam and the other one with my siding. So I don't know, about 10 years ago, I did have a building science specialist come in to look at an ice dam problem. He did the air blower door test and all different kinds of tests and basically told me that when I was, because we were going to re-roof, he said, when you re-roof shingles, open it up and have somebody come in and blow in expanding foam to try to seal the escaping air. We have a 1.5-story 1938 house. We did that, and then we still get the ice dams, and so it was a bit of a disappointment there. And so then that leads me to my next question about the siding. We have I think it's aluminum, some kind of aluminum metal siding. Is it now the fact, is it the roof, or is it perhaps that we need to insulate better on the sides so that the air isn't still escaping onto the roof and melting and then refreezing and getting the ice dam? Thank you.
Sure. Now, the siding has very little effect. Now, we may have air moving up inside the stud cavities of the wall, but if they spray foam tightly and air seal that, that should not be an issue. Now, there are two components to stopping ice dams. One is insulation and air sealing so that we are not letting a lot of heat into the attic. But secondly is we have to have venting, because some heat's going to get into the attic no matter what, especially at the outside edge of the roof where sometimes, you know, where the rafters can be bird's mouthed, you know, right on top of the wall, and there's very little room for insulation. So I'm hoping that they left a 1-inch space underneath the roof sheathing there. So you may have to talk to the contractors that did the work, but if they filled that completely with foam insulation, and there's now no air movement from the soffits up to a ridge vent, we could have an issue. Now, 1.5-story houses, Cape Cod's from 1930, are really difficult to work on. And the time to work on, of course, is when the roof is off, and that ship may have already sailed. But I think you're, again, probably going to have to talk to a building science person who can evaluate what was done and see if we need to add some venting. And I'm sorry, we probably already have a new roof, because the time to do it is when the roof is off, because we can't access.
Yeah, yeah. There you go, Charles. Thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Sandra and Racine in just a second, but just a reminder, John Freiberger, our guest today, John's a registered home inspector, focuses on sustainable renovation and restoration. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home repair on the show today with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. Questions about your home. You have some issue that you would like to have John address. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Sandra in Racine now. Sandra, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind? Sandra, are you there? Tell you what, we're not hearing her, so we will take an email here. David emailed, and maybe we can come back to Sandra. David emailed that he will be replacing a basement bathroom drop ceiling with knotty pine, tongue, and groove. In the ceiling, there's electric for the room and copper plumbing for hydronic heating above. Is it risky to put in a permanent ceiling rather than the drop ceiling, which is very accessible to things above?
Well, the short answer is yes, but you know, drop ceilings are by their nature not, they have this sort of commercial look to them. I think what you need to do is just sort of inspect everything that you have up there. If your hydronic pipes appear to be in good shape, if your electrical is in good condition, make sure that there are nail plates where pipes or wire pass through the wood to which you will be nailing. You know, if worse comes to worse, one can take down a ceiling. So it's really take your chances. How much does it mean to you? Certainly, if there are shutoff valves or if there are junction boxes, those have to remain accessible by code. But if there's nothing up there that you're ever going to have to turn off or connect or disconnect, I don't see a big problem with putting up a knotty pine ceiling. Now, because it's going in the basement and we may have some humidity loading, it would be a very good idea to put a couple layers of finish on both sides of the paneling, including the side that you're never going to see again if you're lucky. That way, we're less likely to have it warp on you in the future.
Good points. Now let's go back to Sandra in Racine. Sandra, what's on your mind?
Hi. We have an old home, 1940s stucco. The only dirt crawl space is in a small area of the home beneath the bathroom where the piping is. But now in the bedroom, we have a little bit added on, but this is the old part of the home. The floor sank below a closet wall, and the wall looks like it's hanging up there. And in this bedroom, there's some cracks in the wall where the ceiling meets the wall. So probably something has shifted, but it's a nice wood floor. Do you think mm-hmm. the whole floor would have to be replaced? We have gutters now, maybe years ago mm-hmm. there weren't. So I guess I'm thinking water might've gotten under it here, but
it's possible.
The closet wall looks like it's hanging up in the air.
Now, Sandra, is this wall that is floating at this point, is that above the crawl space or above the basement?
Neither. There's no basement, and this is away from the crawl space. No basement at all.
Okay.
The crawl space only goes in a small area above the bathroom and a little bit of the kitchen.
Oh, dear. So we've got non-crawl spaces. Basically, we've got voids underneath this floor then. Is that correct?
Got what under it?
You've got voids. You've got area between the floor and the dirt or whatever is underneath the house. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a recipe for disaster. You need to have somebody take a look at that. If you have
an unvented crawl space, you probably have high humidity, and you can have everything from wood decay to powder pulse beetles going on in there. And the code has required since 1980 that all crawl spaces be vented either to the interior or the exterior. Now, in the old days, they vented them to the exterior. But with central heating and ductwork and things, a lot of those vents got closed. So you may have mold, wood decay, and other things going on in there. So we need to talk to somebody. And it may require a little wall cutting or something in the existing crawl space to get in there. But somebody needs to be able to get in there to see what is happening. Now, fortunately, you're in Racine, so you've got a couple of good people, Racine, Kenosha, and Milwaukee, who know old houses, who are registered home inspectors. And so what I think you should probably do is go to the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors website, WAHI. And I think it's just WAHI. I don't know if it's .com or .org, but just Google it. And also the American Society of Home Inspectors. And you should have bios in there and phone numbers and things, and find somebody that knows old houses and crawl space and moisture issues. And let's see if we can get a home inspector to come over and somehow wiggle in or get fiber optics or something in there to see what's happening. I'm a little afraid that what you've got is you've got wood decay. And especially with a stucco house, we really don't want wood decay because the repairs get to be very, very difficult. So you're really going to need somebody to come in and carefully analyze what's going on under there. So let's start. Let's see if we can get a home inspector involved. The home inspector may look at it and say, we got a big problem here. We're going to need to get an architect or an ASHRAE engineer or somebody who designs moisture and thermal barriers involved. And the other thing that you may find is you may decrease your heating bills on the house a lot because we probably have no real insulation in those areas at well and lots of air leaks. So get some professional help and start some investigation and good luck with it. Does that help, Sandra?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. John in Mount Horeb, hello.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about roofing and ice dams. We just recently had our house re-roofed. It has a 412 pitch, quite good insulation in the attic. And the new roofer, or the most recent roofing job, included the ice and water shield 6 feet up from the edge of the roof. Now, historically, I have always raked the roof just as a precaution to prevent ice dams. Now that I have the ice and water shield, can I stop worrying about ice dams and avoid the roof raking?
Yes and no. It's great that they ran it up 6 feet. That's a superior roofer. The code requires that it be run up 1 foot inside the or beyond the inside wall. The GAF shingle says 2 feet, but if you've got 6 feet, that's really helpful. I really don't like raking roofs. I looked at one just last week where there was a lot of damage to the roof, and the gentleman ended up replacing it at a substantial cost. In that you have a lot of insulation, may be good, but if you have a lot of air leaks, that air may be leaking right through your insulation. So we may still have too much heat in the attic. So as we do on every program with Larry, we suggest that in the winter, you have an energy analyst come over and do a blower door test and use some thermal imaging to see what your heat loss is. Because you can have 3 feet of insulation and still have a lot of heat loss because air buoyancy is going to have upward pressure. And if you, especially if you have an older house, that air may be entering the attic and warming the attic and melting the snow right through all of the good insulation you have. So get a building scientist over there, get some evaluation done. The thermal imaging in the middle of winter is just great. 70 degrees inside, 10 degrees outside. It's amazing the plumes of heat and the temperature differentials you can see with the thermal camera. I just love using them in the winter. During the summer, not terribly useful. I guess if it's 100 degrees outside and you crank the air conditioning down to 65, it would help. But I find it's something that is best done in the winter if we're looking at heat loss. So you're going to be spending between $400 and $500 for an energy analyst. You're in Mount Horeb, so you've got several good people in the Madison area that can come out. So I would wait till December, January, February, and then get a little bit of science done and see if maybe we need to rake back some of the insulation and install a spray foam air barrier. Does that help, John?
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today. John is owner and operator of Freiberger and Associates. He's a registered home inspector, focuses on sustainable renovation and restoration. He's going to be with us up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look now at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with John. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home improvement with our regular guest, John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector. He specializes in evaluating older structure. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, consults in restoring and adapting old homes and other buildings. So, questions for John? Give a call at 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. And John, let's take another call. Frank in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Frank.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You can hear me okay?
Well, you sound a little muffled.
All right, I'll try pushing the phone closer to my mouth. Mold remediation. The previous owner or whoever vandalized the house by flooding the basement. What should we do to remediate that?
Okay, so we got a flooded basement that led to mold. And now Frank is wondering how do we remediate the mold in the basement?
Right. Well, unfortunately, we do need a professional. If you have more than 3 square feet of mold, the EPA says hire a professional, do not attempt it yourself. So I would hope that there is some sort of insurance coverage for this. It sounds like maybe it's a vandalism claim rather than, you know, usually when we see mold, Larry, it's from long-term leakage. You know, the roof's been leaking for years or the windows are rotting or something, and the insurance company won't cover it. But perhaps on this one, so the first thing Frank needs to do is talk to his insurance agent. And I would ask the insurance agent, number one, is it covered? And if it is, great. And number two, the insurance agent has probably dealt with mold remediation there in Milwaukee before and knows who the good firms are in Milwaukee that they've worked with. So I would start with the insurance agent. You are going to need to hire a professional. A claim may be possible, so let's start there.
All right. Good luck, Frank. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Kyle in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, I'm going to continue with the mold or moisture in the basement theme today.
Okay.
I have a duplex from the 50s, and on one side, the sewage exhaust runs all the way from the cement floor in the basement to the roof, and in summertime, it leaks when it rains hard enough. In wintertime, I believe it freezes around the top of the pipe and runs all the way down to the basement. So is this a common issue?
Yes, it is. And generally, when you have a sewer vent pipe, sometimes called a stink pipe, usually it's, if it's an older house, duplex from the 50s, it's probably 4-inch cast iron. And it goes up through the roof, and then it is supposed to have a flashing around it. The F.E. Moore Company makes one of the most common flashings. It's a nice flashing because you can bend it to fit the pitch of the roof, and it needs to be installed correctly. And you should be able to look by simply Googling sewer vent flashings or F.E. Moore flashings. You should be able to find one. So I have a house I'm looking at tomorrow, and I know that two of the penetrations going through the roof have tar around them. And there's all kinds of mold underneath it because they were never properly flashed and sealed. Now, if this is a low-pitch roof, you may be able to do it yourself. You do not want to get on a pitch, I'd say, any higher than 4 and 12. So if you got a 6 and 12 or 12-12, you're going to need to have a roofer come in and take care of it. In the winter, we do get condensation because we have water vapor, obviously, coming up through the pipe. Freezes, can melt, and can run down. And if we don't have the flashing, it drips into the attic and then into the ceiling. So this should be a pretty simple fix. I expect the flashing is either defective, the collar may be wrong on it, the cap may be broken. So do a little bit of investigation and maybe see if you can get a local roofer or a handyman who has the correct insurance to come up there and put on a new flashing for you, or do it yourself if it is safe and accessible. But again, as Larry and I always say, download the instructions, because about a quarter of the sewer vents I see are put on wrong.
Okay. Kyle, good luck. Thank you. Tim in Ashland, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I have a basement leak issue that just showed up. The house was built in 76. We're in sand, and it's in along one part of a wall where the concrete floor, you know how you, when you finish a floor, you should have that, you shouldn't have stones sticking up. Well, there's some stones sticking up and some channeling, and I've never had it before until I turned the sprinkler on for the flower bed and left it on for a day. So that was the initiation of the problem. But my question is there a product or what can I do? Because there's a 2 or 3 foot section wall where the floor is properly finished and it's not leaking there. It's only coming through where it looks like somebody ran short of concrete and didn't quite trowel that edge properly.
Sure, sure. Yeah, they didn't consolidate that edge real well, so it's a little bit more porous. But I think, as we said previously to people, check the pitch of your soil, check your downspouts, remember to turn the sprinkler off, and maybe you really don't need to do anything. I mean, if this is something that wasn't a problem from 1976 to 2020, I think by simply controlling the exterior moisture, we're probably in good shape. It is very, very difficult to find products that go on top of concrete or concrete block that stop water. Tons of them are sold, especially at the big box stores, and the one thing that they all have in common is that none of them work.
There you go. Oh, man. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate the call. Nancy'd like to know how to best remove the vinyl floor, the vinyl flooring layers on her wood floor. So she wants to get down to the wood and get rid of the vinyl.
That was a great thing to do. But here's the big concern with vinyl, Larry. The 1950s, 1960s stuff that are 8-inch by 8 or 9 by 9 VAT vinyl asbestos tile have asbestos in them. Sheet flooring, manufactured up through 1987, may have chrysotile asbestos backing. So unfortunately, Nancy, I think you are going to have to call a flooring specialist to come and take a look at it, because if this is old vinyl and there may be more layers there, you may have a layer of asbestos, and you do not want to mess with that yourself. In fact, you're required not to. You need to hire somebody who is certified for the removal of asbestos flooring. So I don't know what city you're from, but you know, don't talk to the big box floors. Talk to a flooring specialist who can recommend somebody to come and take a look at it. What they may do is they may say, hey, we've got to come and cut a little 2x2 square out. We've got to send it into the laboratory to see what it's made of and go from there. And they are also going to have some idea of how to remove the various mastics, because we've got all types of different mastics. And the old black mastic from the 50s, 60s, also had asbestos in the mastic. So we can get into all kinds of trouble when we try to remove vinyl flooring ourselves. So we really need professional help.
And Leslie in Cottage Grove. Hi, Leslie.
Oh, thank you so much. I have two questions, and I think they're kind of short. We'll see. I have a home that was built in 1992. It was pretty much hand-built. It has aluminum siding, and 5 years ago, we had the house washed. After that, it seems that the siding has got a lot of mold on it. I wonder if he washed something off and if I should put something back on. The second question is definitely a building inspection question, should we ever decide to sell the house. We have wooden casement windows throughout, and I've found, because I wasn't paying attention, some of the sashes are rotted. When you crank out the window, the wood separates, and there's the glass. Can windows sashes be replaced? Can this be repaired? Or what is your thought?
Sure. Okay. First question first. That's a good one to bring up, Lisa. We all know about climate change, and Larry and I did a program, I think last year, on how climate change affects your house. And one of the ways climate change affects your house is called green slime. We have green slime, sooty mildew, and other things growing on the siding of houses now that we never had 20 years ago. But because we have more CO in the atmosphere, and because we have more water vapor, we have more green and non-green plants, you know, basically air parasites growing on our siding. And this is simply the result of climate change. So we are finding more and more products to wash things off. So there's nothing that you destroyed by power washing it. This is simply a natural occurrence. The nice thing about your aluminum siding is you can power wash it for many, many times. And if you do wear the paint off, most paint companies make specially formulated roll-on or spray-on paints for both steel and aluminum siding. So it's what's great about the old metal sidings is you can refinish them. You can't do that with the modern vinyl, but with the older stuff, you can. Now, the rotted sashes, depending upon the brand of the windows, you know, first, does the window manufacturer still exist? Is it an Anderson? Is it a Marvin? Is it a no name? Who knows? If it is a major brand window, then you want to talk to a distributor in your area and see whether you can order replacement sashes that can be put into the original jams. You also may find some people who are willing to build those. There are some very good millwright companies in Madison. And you may have to do a little searching to find the right one, but compared to replacing an entire window with all of the work that's required to get it correctly sealed, which means taking off aluminum siding to get at it, your idea of trying to replace sashes is a good one. So you might be able to get factory help for it. Otherwise, you're probably going to have to talk to woodworking shops and see who would be willing to do it. TDS Construction and Tony Trapp Construction are both Madison firms that are contributors and sponsors to public radio. I would start with them because if they don't do it themselves, they probably know millwrights in town because the principals with those two firms have been around for a very long time and are very well connected in the Madison area. Does that help, Lisa?
Oh, so much. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate your insight.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Bob, by the way, talking about windows, Bob wondered how important it is to caulk around windows. If the siding fits well, is it just cosmetic?
Well, Bob didn't tell us what type of siding he has, did he, Larry?
No.
Okay, see, vinyl siding, we don't caulk. Some other sidings we do caulk. If we have a rain screen, well, then caulking doesn't make much difference. So, unfortunately, we don't really have enough information there. If you do have wood siding, then I would probably go to Forest Products Lab and take a look at their paint department. They have downloadable historic and scientific studies on how to maintain paint. If it is an aluminum siding, a manufactured siding of any sort, vinyl, aluminum, steel, whatever, then generally we do not caulk because it is a rain screen. The water can go right through it. And one of the big problems with caulking, Larry, is we're often sealing water in.
When we see people caulking window heads, it's sort of like, let's build a dam so the water goes all the way into the wall. So caulk only if you know what you're doing, and do a little bit of research so that you know what you're doing.
Carol in New Richmond, hello.
Hi there. My question, thank you for taking my call. My question is, we have a stucco home, and I'd like to put some flower boxes on, but I'm kind of concerned about drilling holes into the stucco. I've seen where homes crack going down, and we have aluminum. I wanted to put some window boxes on it. The windows are aluminum windows, and they sure don't look very sturdy to put something into it. So I'd probably be going into the stucco. I can take my question off the air, but wondering what you would do.
Well, Carol, let me ask you first, what's the age of your house?
It's probably, I'm going to guess, a good 80 years old.
80 years old. So it's real stucco, and it may actually be lime-based stucco, and we really do not want to make a hole in that. The other problem that we have is your house is probably balloon framed, and so the integrity of the sheathing is extremely important. So I would come up with some other sort of design for window boxes. I don't know whether we can have something that's on steel legs that are almost invisible if they're painted the stucco color or something, but we really do not want to make a penetration into antique stucco. It is a fairly delicate material, and once we get water in it, especially if it's expanded wire lath type of stucco, which it may be at 80 years of age, that wire lath can actually expand and then cause cracking in the stucco. The wood lath is a little bit more forgiving, but we don't even want to make a hole to find out what type of lath you have. So be careful about your stucco maintenance, and let's not mess with it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. Appreciate it. Nicole just moved into a 1980s home that has a three-season sunroom. It has vents for heat and return ducts, but in the cold winter, it frosts on the inside and then weeps from the ceiling. She wants to stop that.
Yeah, well, what we're doing in the winter, Larry, is we've got this cold room, and we're taking moist indoor air and pumping it in there. So basically what we're doing is we're creating condensation. So the room, the three-season room, probably needs to be converted to a four-season room. And that means adding insulation and adding air sealing. And if this is a typical three-season room where we have uninsulated concrete floor and concrete frost wall, you're going to need to talk to either a thermal barrier expert, or you're going to need to talk to an architect. But you need to isolate that room so that it thermally performs like the rest of the house. Otherwise, you really need to shut off the air to that room in the winter because you're going to be creating problems.
Sherry in Wilton, your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Thank you so much. We have a house that was built in 1896, and there is no bathroom on the second floor. So we would like to put at least a half bath up there, maybe an additional shower if there's room. The problem is that I have not been able to find anyone who is willing to tackle that project. So I wondered if I might need to contact a building engineer or someone who can evaluate the structure up there to make sure we have room, because what I'm thinking is we have a tiny dormer up there in the location where I'd like to put the bath. If we can expand that dormer a little bit, there's already a former chimney chase where we can put the pipes through, but no one's willing to tackle the structure of the roof.
Good. That means you're talking to smart contractors.
Okay, well, what do you advise?
Well, you're going to need a design professional. So that design professional could be an engineer, or it could be an architect, or it could be a home designer who actually knows what they're doing. And beware of home designers. Some are very good, but a lot of them design things and then rely upon the lumber yard, and the guy at the lumber yard is not an engineer. So where is Wilton? Is it Wilton or Milton?
It's Wilton with a W. It's right in the middle of the Elroy Sparta bike trail. So we're in the El Rey, Toma, Sparta area.
Yeah. Okay, so unfortunately, you're ways from the larger cities where we've got, you know, Madison. We've got, you know, you can't throw a tin can without hitting a design professional. But your area is a little bit different. So I talked to a couple of the builders that you know that seem, you know, that seem pretty intelligent and that might have an interest if it were correctly designed. And then say to them, who do you go to if you need some expert advice? Because I want to hire them. And those people, once they have expert advice and we know what structural changes have to be made, may be quite willing to do the work for you. So work with one or two of those builders, ask their advice about getting a good design, and then get a good design. And make sure that your design is submitted to your local jurisdiction, township or village or whatever, for building inspection approval, although you may be in an area where it is not required. But if it is required or available, it gives you a second set of eyes to look at it. I believe Larry noted earlier that a bathtub full of dirt weighs a ton. Well, a bathtub full of water weighs a lot also, probably close to a ton, depending upon the size of it. So if we have a 1896 house with 2x6 joists on the second floor, we may have to do some significant work to strengthen that floor and then to strengthen the walls to take those loads. And then once we cut into that roof, we really need to know what we're doing because these old roofs are very, very lightly framed. So do some checking for somebody in your area that can design this for you. And the other thing you're going to find, this goes for everything, Larry, is that if you have a good plan, you're going to get a better price from the contractor. Because if your plan is not very good and the contractor is guessing and are worried about the contingencies, they're going to throw an extra $5,000 or $10,000 in there just to cover the exigencies that may develop. So spending the money on the plan may actually not increase the cost of the project at all, because the contractor is going to have more confidence in what they're doing.
Very, very good point. Sherry, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate your call. And John, as always, thanks so much for being with us today. Boy, the time flew by. Yeah, it flew by. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to your next visit in a couple of months.
Very good, Larry.
Thank you, John. John Freiberger, registered home inspector. His business is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. And by way of full disclosure, mention that Freiberger and Associates is one of our Wisconsin Public Radio supporters. So that's great as well. Just to take a look to Garden Talk tomorrow, Jeff Epping from the Olbrich Botanical Gardens will be back on Garden Talk to talk about how important it is to include native plants in your garden, especially with these dry conditions we've had. That's tomorrow starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, boy, there's lots more good things in store for us here on the Ideas Network right through the afternoon. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mehler.